Dijeva da jomba yandava zobe sange rigva da shavso de devara jeva jiden jemba jevo deve kalo jurva lana lada menam jedomba sange jomden de bejava shaja atoba la Chudu jamsu jeo dhamba jumden den dejin shewa chanyarwe Sanje bejawa temba dewara shewa jikden jemba kebu dhubi kalu gyurwa lana meba ladami Dhamba sanje jumden den bejawa shaja tuwa la shazelo chudu jamsu Cheo dhomba jomden den dejen sheba cha jomba yandava dzobe sanje Dhomba devara sheba jikden jemba kebu dhube kalu gyur Lana meba ladame namje dhomba sanje jomden den pech Shaja dhuba la cha zelo chudu gyapsu cheo Jambe yala chadze lo kange lo dhru timni tinte nyenda namda rabze Chini tungun chishin sije nige toga legba manz Kanda sibe tsura mare mendomo tunge kize ve Chozo gun la puji tarze yin la chuju yandin su Chudara chedro nyumu nilo legi chadro chuzi Minze dunye nyugu shini chunze radi nam Tene taji sachi tasi yundin hunzo gyasi tuwi gu Chuta chuta chuni kente talu mis Jambi yala du Omo ara baza nade Omo ara baza nade Omo ara Omo ara baza nade Kera Mimba Rabze ve Gada Tenju Shunglu Toba Ye Lodzhi Bobe Mawa Tsedo Su Jujin Medo Tama Reja Lenshi Nyende Genba De Sanje shenlo mide bwa ye Chogun namda shenlo chubara shoy Damba ke namanji chugu kala kenze tente ne Chedara tsambe tuja zema la Sabje chenge charba abdo su Guru Rana Mandala Gana Tayami Chudan Soji Chonamala Chanchu Padu Tani Jasuchi Tagi Chushi Jibi Sunama Ye Chola Pinchi San Chubara Shu Chudan Zonji Chonamala Chanchu Bado Tani Gyamsu Che Tagi Chushi Gibi Sonama Ye Dola Pinchi San Chubara Sho Chudan Zonji Chonamala Chanchu Bado Tani Gyamsu Che Tagi Chushi Gibi Sonama Ye Dola Pinchi San Chubara Sho Lada la me me da me anje ombo da ja jin la zo chu je cho la cha wa che ba na san je sum ba ra do shi shen te we ju ju ba de da je je dam be ju ne je ne de je je na mo la ye ja da lu da ne jin je ju bon da da me ye je nam da jo gun je cha nam che zam ba tam je ke do ta ge chu dun do Good morning and welcome back. We had a break. Can you hear? Is this working? Oh, yeah. We don't really need here. Okay. So we do the usual, just sharing insight, whether anybody has had an opportunity to practice what we discuss in class. To apply in real life, please, everyone is welcome to share. Who wants to go first?
Because the last lesson about the wisdom perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, when I give my food offering.
Mm.
And then I try to look at the food, whatever is a tea or not. If it is a tea, it has so many components of milk, water, tea, and so
many thank you.
Things in the world. So
mm-hmm.
Because of the interdependence, it's not just tea that we made it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a component of so many things. So I thank everybody. And then I live like as it is after I think about the interdependent and not the T is just name that we designate that name as a T.
Mm-hmm.
It could be if we designate that name like water or something else, then we all will say it's the same thing, not T.
Mm.
So I live as it is after I, but because of the class, I try to integrate myself like so as same as I am component of so many things that everybody's so well, pumbunga,
five aggregates
component of five that I was trying to integrate myself after I after the class so I'm so so unhappy about did it correctly as and then I was reading the Mahashara Bharachimba Dojijaba. And it's about all saying about perfection of giving, generosity, everything perfection. But it is not, you don't, Zimba.
Apprehension.
And so if I give something, I give something to him, and thinking that will not the perfection of wisdom. While I was reading that text, so it made me more powerful in understanding of that. But it's just that I was trying to relate myself what we learned from class. So and that's one thing. And the other thing that I was able to help someone else, like because of the anger, which is not good. So thinking about the badness of the anger, and the analogy for the fire,
the nature. Yeah.
So that analogy, I was able to give it to my son, who was mad with some of his friends, and he said, "Oh, he ruined my whole day." Da, da, da. So he was spelling. I said, "Calm down, cause no, I need to speak. I need to vent myself." So I told this analogy, and he calmed down. And said, "Oh, that is yeah, this is, I can take it. I can take these. He'll listen for 5-10 minutes. He will not do that. Because, okay, this is what I do from this. It's so powerful. So in that analogy of the fire and the poison and the stick. It's not the, it's the stick that you hit. So that analogy was also, I tried to explain it. That makes sense, and he was, oh, this is very great. I'll take this and I'll try to practice it when I get angry. So these are the two things that I was able to.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, that's very powerful. And in Lamrim, there is line, I cannot remember the full line, but basically it says that there is something like Shingi Tula Temba Gari Mato Ani Kunjung Kove Kolo Kove, something. Basically what it's saying is, you know, whatever positive action, that virtuous actions that we do, if it is not complemented by the wisdom of emptiness, insight into emptiness, then there are some exceptions where, you know, due to the power of the object, like the three refuge or whatever it is. Other than that, all that, the virtuous actions, if it is not complemented by the wisdom realizing emptiness, then it is actually creating a cause to cycle in samsara. So that's why it is very important that whenever or whatever virtuous action we do, try to bring in that emptiness aspect, that, you know, whatever we are doing, it does not really, you know, that's what Geshe-la used, this iota of, you know, inherent existence. Yeah, so if we are able to remind, if we are able to remind ourselves of that all the time, then the virtue becomes very powerful. Then that becomes like an antidote to really sever the root of samsara. Otherwise, yeah, if you just engage in generosity, it is to have a better or a wealth for our samsara, next samsara life. Even the practice of moral ethics, it will facilitate us to have a good rebirth. Not really to cut the root of samsara. So it is very important to all the time, you know, bring that aspect. So that's very good. Yeah, that's
so
very good.
So when I told my son about the what I learned, that was so, he's very helpful. But after 2-3 hours, then I tried to think about the internet, because it's all, I helped him. After 2 hours, I realized that. Then I said, okay, it's because of interdependent, and also I didn't do anything because of the, I helped him. I heard this kind of, that I cannot do this in Zimbabwe. So
yeah.
I tried to think about the after 2-3 hours.
So of course, if you're able to think through that, it will help to reduce that self-grasping. Because otherwise we say, oh, I did it, I helped him, I am this and this. So there is already a strong self-grasping. Yeah. So that actually holding on to this inherent existence of I there, something solid from their side. So that's very good, very good. That's, I would say, right on the spot. What you have learned here, you are able to apply in class, I mean, outside the world. That's what we wanted. Otherwise, you know, it is, as I repeated before, I don't want to say again. Okay, yes.
Yeah, I also passed on these two things because they were powerful and they were well received. And so when I greet someone new, it's like I think of, it's not just them, it's like their whole society, their whole family, their whole, because that's what, the same with me. And this morning I was drying my foot, and the left foot, and I saw something made me laugh, made me stop by self-grasping, because there was a beauty mark.
Mm.
So sole of the middle of the sole of the feet. My mother had the same thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like that's her body, you know. It's like me.
Oh, I see.
It's like I got that from them. I mean, you know, it's like what are you doing? You know, it's like, I just laughed. You know. Like,
why are you so attached to it? Isn't it?
Right.
Like it is not even yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyone? Yes. Sorry. Behind.
Since it's because of the anger last time, envy issue thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I shared with my grandson when I went home about angry. If you get angry, you know, like Rinpoche says, there's a story about the boat. Every time you get angry, you put nail. Accumulate in a month. How many, you know, like just to look at it visually, you know, how many nails are there. Oh, and then you realize, you know, so that's a really helpful. So I share with my grandson and talk about it, in which he told us this and this. And then he was like so happy. Oh, that's a great idea. And he went into his, you know, like a bedroom and bring a big, you know, big paper.
Uh-huh.
Then he wrote down her mom's name and my name and, you know, his name, and put it there. We have to do that.
Okay. No.
And then mom came home. What is this? What is this? You know, who did this? You know, like the paper. Oh, so whenever whoever gets angry, you know, one, like five, you know, one, two, three, four, and then cut, you know.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like so wonderful.
That's very good.
Yeah. Try not to. When you get angry, you put there. Then you will see at the end, you know, it's minimized.
The goal
is to minimize how many, you know, what should be envy, you know.
Yeah, that's very good. That's really good. That's a great idea. But I think you got yourself into this trap now. You have to be very careful now. Okay, that's very good. I think it's a very good idea, especially, you know, as a family, if you are trying to work on your anger issue. So I think that's the way, you know. And especially parents, you are actually teaching your son and children, you know, not to get angry. And then they say, okay, you got angry, you know, how many times? That's good.
He gets oh, no, you know, it's just like getting nailed, you know. He needs a problem and want to watch, you know, his thing. So that's really helpful.
Thank you. Okay, good. Thank you, thank you. Yes. Okay.
All right, well, I was going to share an incident. You know, I in my own past, I have not to a great extent, you know, to a really vitriolic extent, but, you know, I've experienced road rage, my own sense of road rage. And someone, me, the other day, I was in the right-hand lane, two lanes turning right, and I made the right turn, but I needed to get to the left, so I pulled left in front of another car. And the woman in the other car was absolutely furious. She was yelling and shouting and screaming and flipping me off and shouting, and I couldn't hear a word she said. And we get stopped at a traffic light and not moving anywhere, and she's just shouting and shaking her fist and not stopping and pointing at me. And my first reaction, my jaw just dropped. Wow, was it that important? You know, you know, Mary was in the car with me. I said, I really want to get out of the car and go talk to her. She said, no, don't escalate it. Well, I knew she was right. And of course, I wasn't going to do that. But my reaction, rather than to get angry back at her, so I must have learned something over the years, was concern for her rather than getting angry back at her. But it finally got to the point where I had to do something, so I gave her a peace sign, which didn't seem to help much, but it made me feel better. But you know, the two aspects were: first of all, I was happy that I had learned not to retaliate. But the other is that, you know, also what I had learned was concern for the person who is getting so angry, you know, wishing that hoping that she'd be able to calm down and, you know, not do so much harm to herself. You know, this happens on the road all the time. You know, it happens every day. I don't end up in traffic a whole lot anymore because I'm retired. I don't have to commute to work. But I know this is there, you know, sometimes multiple times on your trip to work, on your trip home, and think about how much of this there is out there just around the Twin Cities, much less all around the country and all around the world, people shaking their fists at each other and yelling and shouting and getting so angry over this tiny little thing of who got in line first, you know. It's quite a lesson, you know, to teach yourself not to respond, and second of all, to teach yourself a better way to manage your own emotions in the face of this, and maybe possibly be helpful to the other person.
Yeah, okay, thank you.
There's a question. There does seem to be so much more anger and anxiety in the world, in our country. What do you suggest in a meditation? What type of meditation would you suggest to do for us to try to send good energy, good thoughts, love, compassion? Is there anything specific or just...
Yeah, of course, the first thing is we talk about patience. So there are many techniques to first reduce our own anger. And then other thing is, like what Ken mentioned. So if you're able to feel compassion towards that person, it's completely different. So I find that the word sorry is so powerful. In this kind of situation, if you go there and you just say, I'm so sorry, I think that will just, you know, stop everything. The other person didn't really expect. Normally they don't expect when you come out of the car and they expect you to confront the person. When you say, I'm so sorry, that person kind of melts down, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like unexpected. You are not expecting that. And I find in the car, when you're driving there, just showing your hand.
Yeah.
When you do something else and you do this thing, it completely changes our reaction.
Yeah,
when we notice that somebody cut your lane or somebody was on the wrong side.
Yeah.
But if the person smiles at you and waves at you, you no longer feel that anger.
Yeah.
So likewise, if you are able to do that, no matter whether who is right or who is wrong, if you are able to do that, so that's what we call offer the victory to others. So if you raise your hand and say, it completely changes. You feel yourself, if somebody does something and then when they say sorry, it's completely different.
Do you think we can do something to change the world?
Unfortunately, there is no such thing as, you know, we can just send out something and change everything. If that were the case, Buddha would have done that, isn't it? But of course, we can always do this kind of Tonglin practice, always do compassion meditation, send out your happiness, love, and all that, and then try to take on others' pain and suffering. So that's what we can do about. But of course, we cannot really change the whole thing, you know. No way.
Yeah, but as an individual, we, you know, when we're peaceful, we do have an influence.
Definitely.
But then it you know, it can spread, you know.
Definitely. So the best way is setting the example. So even in your family, if you want others to be calm in all this, you have to show them that, you know, this is how to respond, this is how to manage, how to regulate your emotions. You say that you have to be, you know, calm and patient, but when something happens, you get into temper. Then they will say, oh. Sometimes, you know, the best message, best teaching is just show them. And they will see, oh, wow, he is so calm, she is so calm. I want to be like that person. That's when they will start to inquire, how do you do that? You know, how come you are not affected by that? That's when you tell them, that's what I do. Yeah, just when Ken mentioned, I remembered, when we talk about flaws of anger, disadvantages of anger, in text it says, midu susu cheje tamba mimbati. So of course this is talking about in the next life, you will have an ugly bird or ugly face. But in this very life, we can tell somebody, when person gets into rage, how ugly that person turns into. no matter whatever makeup they have on. When the person gets angry, it's quite become so scary. So we don't have to go, you know, next life and all this. But in this very life, the person becomes so scary. It's like, oh, I don't want to, you know, associate with that person. You just want to run away from that person. So from that very experience, we can see that anger is not good. It really drives away your friends or whoever, you know, person don't want to be with you. Mm. Anyone?
There was a book I was reading at the monastery this week, and it was kind of giving an overview of the Buddhist Sattva, you know, and it said interesting, it was like a psychological judo flip, you know, that you could see what when people project an energy, whatever it is, you see it as a service to your ability to practice whatever it is. And I thought, wow, I have a long way to go. You know, but the other thing is I remember my first Tibetan teacher, he was giving a teaching in Boulder, Colorado at Naropa, and he was explaining methods of changing situations, you know, neutralizing them, you know, taking negative to positive and then transcending the two of them, you know. And there was a guy from a different faith that was there just testing the waters or something. And he said, you know, that doesn't work for me at all. He says, it's like my emotions when they arise, it's like if I'm in a canoe or, you know, in a boat and going down the water, I have to ride it out all the way to the end, you know, like a really long ways until finally he distanced himself from that thing. Whereas, so there's a lot of different dispositions and a lot of different methods, and I think if we find the ones that help us and help others at the, you know, at the same time, we're doing good, or at least attempting to have the right motivation.
Yeah. Anyone? Okay. So thank you for sharing. You see, we all benefit from all this. So now some people go, oh, I see, I can do that, you see. That's the benefit when you share. Especially that, you know, the family, the chart thing, maybe you should think about it, you know. Do a chart and then, you know, see who gets angry. Yeah. And then try to reduce that. Of course, those Kadamba lamas. They use stones, pebbles, the white one and the black one. So every time the negative attitude or negative state of mind arises, they just one. Every time a virtuous mind arises, they put white one. And then slowly they will see, at the end of the day, they look at it and how many times, which are the more frequent ones. And then they try to work on it. And then they come a day where, you know, you see very little or very small number of black ones. And it is like overtaken by the white pebbles. That's another way to do it.
Can I say something? You can get some at Michael's. The store.
Okay.
It's true. They have a little bag, you know, a little mesh bag. And you can buy those.
Yeah. Yeah, we should do that.
About this practice, I want to share something. I was at the jury duty and we were waiting to be called. And so we have a couple of five people on the table. So we were talking about the teaching or interdependence. So I tried to explain about this one to one of the lady, and she said she had 6-7 grandkids, and then she's going to go to somewhere for vacation after the duty. So then I told this story about the negative, putting the next stone, and white stone type. So she was so impressed. She said, I'm going to try this when I was when she will go to vacation with the kids. Definitely I'm going to teach this to my grandson. But I'm not going to use this black and white black stone. I'm going to use purple because this color is so sensitive. So that I want to share. Thank you for sharing this. I definitely want to teach my young. I told her that how we can change all these bad people. So I said, to your kids and to your kids, each one will have friends. And from them, and it will go ripple effect.
Yes, yes.
So, but the main thing was, she said, I would not use this.
Thank you. That's good to know. Okay, so today is a meditation session. So I thought to maybe we will try to do some sort of a kind of a analytical meditation to cultivate equanimity. Remember, we discussed about bodhicitta and how important to kind of level our attitude. At the moment, even though we want to, you know, generate compassion and bodhicitta and all this, unless and until you level that bias attitude, there is no way. Because when we try to, let me rephrase. At the moment, we have these different types of emotional response to certain types of people. So when you think of your friends or your family members, those people who are close to you, you have a particular emotion. That's what we call attachment. Whereas when you think of people whom you had difficulty with, whom you don't really like, we have another kind of emotion, that is aversion. And then when we think of those people who are stranger to us, we have this indifference response to them. You don't feel anything about them. So as long as we are not able to level that, as long as we are not able to reduce that bias, there is no way we can cultivate compassion. Because here, when we talk about cultivating compassion, we are not talking about what is called the biological aspects of compassion, which comes naturally towards your, you know, inner group, or what you call your inner circle. We automatically have that compassion, that feeling of closeness. So we are not talking about that. When we talk about compassion, we are cultivating compassion to all sentient beings, including our enemies, including strangers. So for that kind of, to cultivate that kind of compassion, we need to reduce that biased attitude. So we are trying, we will, of course this is just giving a taste. I will just try to guide, and then you can do at home, you can improvise that, you can elaborate that, you can bring in your own reason. And I think we have discussed during the class on that topic, why there is no purpose of clinging to this, you know, attachment to a certain group of people and aversion to another group of people. Because when you really examine why we have these different attitudes, why we feel so differently to a different group of people, we will come to realize that you have this closeness to some group of people because they have done something good to you. They have been kind to you. They have done some favor to you. So because of that, you have this feeling. And then some people, you have this feeling that, oh, they have harmed me in the past. Remember how anger arises? There are 9 reasons. That person harmed me in the past, is harming me now, will cause harm me in the future. Mm-hmm. And then other one is?
My family.
Yeah, my relatives. The person has caused harm to my friends and families in the past, are causing now, will cause in the future. And then the third one is, this person is very nice to my enemy in the past, was nice to my enemy in the past, is very treating them, you know, friends to my enemy, and will do so in the future. So these are the 3 reasons we come up with to form that label. A group of people, we label them as friends and families. Another group of people, we label them as strangers. Another group of people, we give this label of enemies. But when you really think about it, is there really, you know, this absolute thing about enemy or friends? It is not. It is just our attitude. We see some person completely black, completely negative. But that very same person is seen by another person completely white. So there is no certainty that, you know, that person is completely bad. It is your attitude. It is your perception. And our perception can be wrong. We can tell from our own experience the small things we are mistaken how many times. And the reason also that person helped me in the past. But we don't know what will happen in the future. That person may cause a big harm. Remember we talked about Michael Cohen and Trump? My buddy, he's the fixer, you know. I will die for him. And now like arch enemy. Both of them calling the other one the liar. You see, morning's friend can become the night's arch enemy. So there is no certainty that, you know, in friends and enemies. Even enemies of the morning can become your, you know, buddy in the evening. So why are we so stuck with that label? And then we talk about impermanence. Everything changes. Nothing is permanent. Likewise, enemy, friends, changes. Stranger, when you first came here, when I first came here, I don't know you at all. To me, you were stranger to me. But now, no longer. My friends. So you see, so there is no, you know, what you call the certainty about, you know, enemy, friend, stranger. And then when we think of all these people, from their own side, they are equal in wanting happiness. Whether it's your enemy, whether it is your friend, whether it's stranger, from their side, all are equal in wanting happiness and not wanting to experience misery and pain. So for that reason, we should treat them equally. And from our own side, if we think from this, the 7-point, the cause and condition, cause and effect, the 7-limb cause, that method, all have been our mother at one time. When they were our mother or father or whatever, they have been kind to us the same way this mother or parents have been kind to us. And then even if you don't want to, you know, subscribe to that rebirth and being mother and all these things, but when you think of, you know, the interdependence, how we are reliant on people. Even the bus driver, I go to university by bus nowadays. Without the bus driver, there's no way I can get to my workplace. Then, without the bus, even there's a driver, cannot. And how many people have played a role in making that bus? How many people? So everybody has a role to play in our life. Sometimes we think that we are, you know, self-made. We are so independent. But it is not. It is not. We are completely at the mercy of others. In Atlanta, it's very funny. When there is a bit of a bad weather, wow, it's a big deal and all that. You know, the supermarket, you go there and people are really buying things. So from that kind of incident, you can see if there's no supermarket. If you have a, you know, box full of money, what are you going to do? Are you going to eat the currency? That note? No. You still need other people to bring in food and to sell and all that. And then even people, even those group we label as enemy, without them, there is no way we can cultivate patience, tolerance. Enemy is the only one that facilitates us to perfect our patience. So when you think that way, so why are we, you know, just making these kind of, what do you call these categories, when they are, everything is equal. So that's the idea behind cultivating this. So these are the reasons you can use. These are some kind of some examples that I'm giving you. But you can bring in your own experience to confirm, to make, to reinforce this concept of this belief that, you know, everybody is equal. But here we are not saying that you cannot have love and affection for your friends and all this. Here we are basically trying to reduce that bias attitude. And the reason it is built on, the basis of our bias attitude, it is all this kind of, you see, what do you call, very shaky basis. Because that person helped me, that's why I'm so attached to it. But that may person may, you know, turn against you in the evening. You never know. So this kind of reasoning, when you apply these reasons, then you will realize that whatever you are holding on to, actually there is no much basis. It's very shaky. I'm trying to find another word to use. Precarious. It's very shaky. Yeah. So you can bring in your own experience. Oh, you know, one time, you know, this person was, you know, when I first, you know, remember we sometime ago, when we meet the person for the first time, you don't really like the person, but slowly that person becomes your best friend. Have you ever experienced that kind of situation? And sometimes, you know, that person, the first time meeting, oh, you know, I really like this person, then turn out to be your enemy, becomes your enemy. And then stranger, you know nothing of that person, and you become so friendly with person. So you can bring your own experience to reinforce that. So that's what we are going to do. But we will begin with our usual, that meditation, the focus attention meditation. Since we have been doing this, I will just read from here. I will not go into detail. Just I will read and then you can follow. But the main point is to rest your mind on one object. Try not to get your mind distracted. Every time your mind wanders, just bring it back and try to remain on that object as long as possible. So the first time you may notice that, you know, you were only able to focus for 30 seconds, even less than that. But then if you bring it back and bring it back, you will notice that it is getting better. And I mentioned this before. Sometimes when you do this, and in the, let's say if you do this for 1 week, 2 weeks, maybe at second week you will realize that I am more distracted than I started. You will find that. That is not because that, you know, you are, your practice is,
declining.
It is because that you are improving. You are becoming more aware. You are becoming more mindful. You are noticing your mind wandering more often. Sometimes you don't even notice that your mind has wandered, and you are busy following that mind. So don't get, you know, discouraged when you find that you are becoming more distracted. It is actually a good sign because you are noticing, you are improving. Okay, let's do this. You want to turn that light off, one light off, maybe we just leave one on. If you turn off all light, then we feel sleepy.
Is that good?
Yeah. Yeah, you can turn that off as well. Okay. But don't fall asleep. First, find a very comfortable posture. That's important. Let's begin the practice by finding a relaxed, comfortable posture. You could sit on the chair or on the cushion on the floor. If you are on a cushion on the floor, you can sit in a full lotus position with each foot resting on the opposite thigh. If you cannot sit in a full lotus position, then the half lotus is sufficient. If you have difficulty sitting on the floor, you can sit on a chair or in whatever position that is most comfortable to you. Your spine should be straight, like an arrow. Hold your head slightly bent forward, not too high. Shoulders should be level and relaxed, neither slouching nor stiff or tense. Place your two hands in the meditation gesture, the right hand on top of the left hand, with your thumbs touching at about the level of the navel. Alternatively, you could place your hands gently on your thigh with the tips of your fingers resting on your knees. Let your mouth and teeth rest in a relaxed, natural position. The tip of your tongue should rest gently on the upper palate, just behind the teeth. Let your eyes relax. You can either keep them gently closed or gaze softly in front of you at an angle where, if you were to look, you would see the tip of your nose. Let's take three deep breaths, each time breathing all the way down into your belly as if you are filling up the torso with the in-breath from the bottom to the top. Breathe deeply in this way, one breath at a time, and feel your belly rising each time as the air fills in. When you exhale, let your breath out at a slow, measured pace. Again, draw in a deep breath, filling your body with revitalizing oxygen. And as you slowly release this second breath, feel yourself relaxing. On the final deep breath, draw in all of your attention into this moment and release the breath slowly, feeling yourself drop into your body and into the present moment. Now bring your attention to the present moment by focusing on your breath. Choose a pace of breathing that is neither shallow nor deep, just natural. Now choose a focal point to help anchor your awareness of the sensation of your breathing. Notice where you feel your breath in your body most prominently. It could be the tips of your nostrils, where you feel subtle sensations as you breathe in and out, or your belly, where you feel the sensation of its rising and falling as you breathe. Once you have the focal point, just breathe in and out while resting your mind on that focal point. There is no need to think about your breath nor control it. Simply allow your body to breathe naturally at its own pace and experience each incoming and outgoing breath. As you do this, you might notice that your mind has wandered. You may start thinking about other things. If this happens, it is not a problem. It's very natural. Simply notice that your mind has wandered and gently bring it back to your breath. It is important not to judge yourself when this happens. Simply bring your attention back to your breath and continue focusing on it. If you are finding it difficult to hold your attention on your breath, you can try counting. You can try mentally counting your breath with each round of an inhalation and exhalation as one cycle. Breathe in, as you breathe out, mentally say one. You could count up to 10 and then start over. Another helpful technique is to place a hand on your belly to feel the rising and falling with each breath. Either of these techniques can use to help hold your attention on the breath for long periods of time. If you feel yourself getting dull or sleepy, you might want to check your posture to ensure that your spine is upright. You may also try opening your eyes briefly to allow some light to come in. Then return to the breath. Now begin to return your attention to your body. Start to notice the physical sensations that you are feeling in your posture. Bring yourself back into this room. Start to notice any sounds, smells, or bodily sensations that you are sensing here in the present moment. Let's conclude our practice. When you are ready, you can gently open your eyes. How was that? Able to focus, or mind keeps wandering?
Focus.
Focus? Good. My mind kept wandering. Thinking about tea. Okay, let's break for tea. Trip somewhere?
Ski trip.
Summertime.
With paid instructor.
Oh, I see.
I think that is good, though.
Mm. No. Right. Similar, but not quite the same.
In a meditative mode. Watch out for the tree.
Tree lessons. She lessons.
Couldn't help it.
Okay. Are we ready to do for more meditation? To do more meditation? Okay. So we will do something what is called resting the mind in its natural state. And then we will try to, we will end with the that analytical meditation. So that one, yeah, it's up to you. I will just kind of cue you to bring your own analysis. Okay, let's get into our meditation posture. And then we will skip all that breathing and all that. Just let's get straight into focusing our mind on our breath. Like the prior one, just find a focal point, whichever you find it easy to focus your mind on. It could be the tips of your nostrils where you feel the sensation of your breathing, or it could be at your belly where you feel that sensation of rising and falling of your belly when you breathe in and out. Just choose one of these two focal points, or if you want to, you can even do the traditional one where you can visualize Buddha's image. Instead of focusing on breath, you can just focus on the Buddha's image, whichever is more convenient and whichever you find it more effective. Here the objective is to focus. Objective is to maintain your concentration on that focal point, on that object. Now let's shift our awareness from the breath to our unfolding inner experiences. Allow any thoughts, emotions, or sensations in the space of your mind arise naturally, and simply be aware of this presence. Allow them to arise, to be there, and then pass on in their natural course. Do not show preference for one kind of thought or feeling over another. Do not try to resist certain kinds of thoughts or feelings, and try not to get involved in these thoughts or feelings. Simply allow them to emerge in the space of your mind. Observe them while they are there, then allow them to pass naturally. I find it helpful to think this as a surveillance camera. Surveillance camera will just observe, just survey the area and don't do anything. The mind is similar to the ocean. On the surface, it can be calm and clear or stormy and rough. Similarly, the mind can be agitated and swirling out of control or pleasant and calm. But in the depths of the ocean, deep below the changing nature of the surface, the depths are always cool, clear and calm. Try to connect to this part of your mind. No matter what is occurring on the surface, it is always luminous, clear and calm in the depth. Now begin to return your attention to your body. Start to notice the physical sensations that you are feeling in your posture. Bring yourself back into the room. Start to notice any sounds, smells, or bodily sensations that you're sensing here in the present moment. You can slowly open your eyes now. Sorry, I forgot to distribute this, so I had to cut this short. So you all are familiar with this, yeah. This is the immeasurable prayers. So what we will try to do is, we will do a bit of a short, analytical meditation, and then when you feel that you have kind of generated this equanimity to all sentient beings, then we can silently recite these prayers. The first is, may all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. So we are making this wish that sentient beings not only have happiness, but also the causes. And then, of course, this is immeasurable love, and then the may all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. That's the compassion. And the immeasurable joy follows this. May all sentient beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. So it's translated as sorrowless bliss. Normally said, may all sentient beings not be separated from happiness and its causes. And then may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. So this is so important, the last part. Actually, when we analyze, when we examine closely all our troubles, we will find that the last one has a role to play. We had difficulty with people either due to strong attachment or due to aversion towards other persons. So if we are able to cultivate this equanimity, this feeling of equality, then yeah, our problems and troubles will be minimized. So what we will do is, we will try to do the analytical meditation, and then yeah, we can recite this silently whenever you are ready, whenever you feel that you have this sense of equanimity. Okay, so I will just cue you to bring your own reasoning. Okay, we will begin with, as usual, with a comfortable posture. And instead of going into the attention-focused meditation, we will directly dive into this analytical meditation. So the first thing is, bring to your mind these three sets of people. The people you call your friends and families, and then another group of people, or just one person whom you consider or view as stranger, and then another person whom you had difficulty with. And once you have these three types of people, and examine your feeling towards them, when you bring up to your mind the person whom you treat as your family or friends, what kind of emotion arises? Likewise, when you think of a person whom you view as stranger, what kind of emotion arises? In the similar way, when you think of a person whom you have difficulty with, what kind of emotion arises? Just spend a few minutes examining our attitude towards these three kinds of people. When we do that, we will realize that we have different attitudes towards these three different people. We realize that we have attachment towards people whom we call or treat as our friends and family. And then we have kind of indifference attitude towards people whom we perceive as strangers. And then we have this uncomfortable kind of feeling or aversion towards those whom we have difficulty with. Now spend a few minutes to examine why is the reason. Why do we feel these different attitudes towards these people? When we examine closely, the most common reason that we may come up with is that the people whom we have attachment is due to the label that we give them as our friends and relatives. And then our aversion towards towards people whom we have difficulty with is due to perceiving them as our enemy. And likewise, our indifference feeling is because they are stranger to us. But now the question is, is there such thing as absolute friends and enemies? We see from our own experience that enemies does not remain enemies forever. Likewise, friends changes. That person may be our friends now, but it may turn against us in the future. And strangers, whom we label them as strangers, may become our good friends. So there is no certainty in making these distinctive categories. So bring your own experiences to reinforce that belief. Using your own experiences and reasoning, come to the conclusion that there is no reason to label these people distinctively and then have this kind of distinctive attitudes towards them. And also factor in the interdependence nature of oneself and others, how dependent we are on others, and how others are kind in their own ways. And also factor in the fact that just like us, they all are same in wanting happiness and not wanting to suffering. With that, try to generate a strong wish or compassion and then you can silently recite the words of prayers. You can alternate the recitation of prayers with the analytical meditation when you feel that this sense of equanimity is not strong enough or it is diminishing. You can go back to that analytical meditation and then generate this strong sense of equanimity and after that you can continue reciting that prayer and wishing them happiness. And now make a strong determination that you will continue holding that sense of equanimity to all sentient beings throughout the day. With that, you can open your eyes. Now, no enemies, isn't it? We're able to equal. So this is just a glimpse or just a taste. So that's how we do this meditation in meditation on equanimity. So you can elaborate that, you can use your own reasoning, and then you can follow a stepwise. You spend some stages, you can spend more time, or you can do, you know, at the moment we just said that bring all the three at the same time. But if you feel that difficult, you can just doing one at a time. First bring a stranger or a relative, and then you examine why you are. How. First you have to acknowledge, you have to recognize your feelings towards them. And then you have to compare these distinct feelings, and then you kind of examine why I am feeling this. And then you will come to that reason. And then you kind of refute that belief or that reason by bringing in other logical reasons. And then you reinforce that this is not right. You know, there's no reason to do that. So if you do that persistently, continuously, then I think we will be able to level our attitude towards all sentient beings. And then we can hope to cultivate compassion. Otherwise, we will be only able to cultivate compassion towards our own, what we label as in-group, our friends and families. So what is called the spotlight. It's only shining on one group of people, ignoring the rest of the people. So that's about it. Any questions? If no questions, then we will do that.
Say the dedication prayers first. Mandala offering the first verse on page 4, and then continue with the concluding prayers on page 6.
Me do tama rira linje nyende yemba de sanje shindo mi dembo wa drogun namda jena che barajo rana mendala gana ya daya me semjo rimbo je maje panam ke gyuru je Keba nyamba meba yang kone kondo pe warai sho. Kuzi rabden jin namgara chile shoju yeb. Losan tembe dreme sasum ji dove me se tado ne gyuru ji. Rave korve shengam zo pendan dewa malu jungwe ne. Chere se wan ten zen ja zo yi, shabe se te pa do ten jo ro che. Che dara kenpa ta kundo sambo te ya te shen, te da kungi che su ta lo che, kya wa de da tam che rab do ngo. Kya wa tam che ji, ngo wa ka la cho do nga ba de. Ta jen je ve tsa wan di gwen jang sang bu chue je rap mo wai je.